As Unitarian Universalists, we know that wisdom comes from many places: Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, poetry, art, music, the sciences, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's first reading is adapted from a TED Talk done by Michael Norton, a social science researcher who works as an associate professor at the Harvard Business School. And he says, "So I want to talk today about money and happiness, which are two things a lot of us spend our time thinking about, either trying to earn them or trying to increase them. And a lot of us resonate with this phrase, money can't buy happiness. And I want to suggest that, in fact, that's wrong. And if you think that, you're just not spending it right." So instead of spending it the way you usually spend money, maybe if you spent it differently, that might work a little better. So CNN, a little while ago, wrote this interesting article on what happens to people when they win the lottery. It turns out that people think when they win the lottery, their lives will be amazing. This article is about how their lives get ruined. What happens when people win the lottery is, one, they spend all the money and go into debt, and two, all of their friends and everyone they've ever met find them and bug them for money. It ruins their social relationships. In fact, they have more debt and worse friendships than they had before they won the lottery. So a lot of people commented on the article, and the comments on the article show that when people got money, it made them antisocial. So as I told you, it ruins people's lives and their friends bug them. Also, money often makes us feel very selfish, and we do things only for ourselves. We at the business school thought that maybe the reason money doesn't make us happy is that we're spending it on the wrong things. In particular, we're always spending it on ourselves. And we wondered what would happen if we made people spend more money on others. So instead of being antisocial with their money, what if they were more pro-social with it? So we thought, let's make people do it and see what happens. Let's have some people do what they usually do and spend money on themselves, and let's make some people give money away and measure their happiness and see if, in fact, they get happier. So the first way we did this was one Vancouver morning. We went out on the campus of the University of British Columbia, and we approached people and said, "Do you want to be in an experiment?" And they said yes, and we asked them how happy they were, and then we gave them an envelope. One of the envelopes had things in it that said, "By 5 p.m. today, spend this money on yourself." And we gave examples of what they could spend money on, and other people got a slip of paper that said, "By 5 p.m. today, spend this money on somebody else." And also inside the envelope was money. Now, we manipulated how much money we gave them. Some people got this slip of paper and $5, and some people got this slip of paper and $20. We let them go about their day and do whatever they wanted, and we called them up at the end of the day, and we asked them, "What did you spend it on? And how happy do you feel now?" So if you give undergraduates $5, it looks like coffee to them. And they run over to Starbucks, and they spend it as fast as they can. Some people bought coffee for themselves, the way they usually would, and others bought coffee for somebody else. So the very same purchase, just targeted toward yourself or toward somebody else. What did we find when we called at the end of the day? People who spent money on others got happier. People who spent money on themselves, nothing happened. It didn't make them less happy. It just didn't do much for them. The other thing we saw is that the amount of money doesn't matter much. People thought $20 would be way better than $5. In fact, it doesn't matter how much money you spent. What really matters is that you spent it on somebody else rather than on yourself. What we see again, though, is that the specific way you spend on other people isn't nearly as important as the fact that you spend on other people in order to make yourself happy, which really is quite important. So you don't have to do amazing things with your money to make yourself happy. You can do small, trivial things and still get the benefits from doing this. And he goes, I'm really cutting a lot of the TED Talk, but he talks about other examples and other contexts of this happening as well. And he summarizes by saying, across all of these different contexts, your personal life, your work life, even things like intramural sports, we see that spending money on other people has a bigger return for you than spending on yourself. So if you think money can't buy happiness, you're not spending it right. The implication isn't you should buy this product instead of that product and that's the way to make yourself happier. It's that you should stop thinking about which product to buy for yourself and try giving some of it to other people instead. Ultimately, when you do that, you'll find you benefit yourself much more.
Our second reading is adapted from Khalil Gibran's book, The Prophet, specifically from the section entitled On Giving. You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things that you keep and guard for fear that you may need them tomorrow? And tomorrow, what shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog burying bones in the trackless sand as she follows the pilgrims to the holy city? And what is fear of need but need itself? Is not dread of thirst when your well is full the thirst that is unquenchable? There are those who give little of the much which they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desire makes their gifts unwholesome. And there are those who have little and give it all. These are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. And there are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. They give as in yonder valley the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. Though the hands of such as these God speaks, and from behind their eyes God smiles upon the earth. It is well to give when asked, but it is better to give unasked, though through understanding. And to the open-handed, the search for one who shall receive is joy greater than giving. And is there aught you would withhold? All you have shall someday be given. Therefore, give now, that the season of giving may be yours and not your inheritors. You often say, I would give, but only to the deserving. The trees in your orchards say not so, nor the flocks in your pasture. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish. Surely, she who is worthy to receive her days and her nights is worthy of all else from you. And he who has deserved to drink from the ocean of life deserves to fill his cup from your little stream. And what desert greater shall there be than that which lies in the courage and the confidence, nay, in the charity of receiving? And who are you that people should rend their bosom and unveil their pride, that you may see their worth naked and their pride unabashed? See first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. For in truth it is life that gives you unto life while you For in truth, it is life that gives unto life, while you, who deem yourself a giver, are but a witness. And you, receivers, and you are all receivers, Assume no weight of gratitude, lest you lay a yoke upon yourself and upon him who gives. Rather, rise together with the giver on her gifts as on wings. For to be overmindful of your debt is to doubt their generosity.
If you haven't figured it out yet, today's service is about generosity. And so for the sermon, we're going to share stories of generosity. And so I'll start sharing a story, and then Kim will share one, and then we'll invite you to share one with your neighbor. I've had time to think about it, unlike you. So I don't feel like I'm a generous person, and here's why. I feel that I have a lot of freedom in my life, and I mostly choose to do things I enjoy. It seems I don't define easy things as generous, only hard, sacrificial things. However, I think defining myself as not generous has had a bad side effect of making me less generous than I otherwise might be, because I wonder if my belief in myself stops me from doing even little things. As Khalil Gibran said in the earlier reading, see first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. So I decided to remove this definition of myself as a selfish person and to try to start doing little things and see what happens. Here's a story about a few small acts of generosity that I did that have bloomed into a bigger idea that I really like. So I've been told many times for many reasons that we shouldn't give money to panhandlers. Yet in the moment, I want to do it. I see a human face, and I want to treat them with respect and cheerfully give them money and not care what they spend it on. Quoting Khalil Gibran again, and she who has deserved to drink from the ocean of life deserves to fill her cup from your little stream. Sometimes that happens outside the grocery store, and I offer them some fruit at the same time. Bananas and strawberries are a big hit. Recently, I found $11 on the sidewalk, and I knew I'd be walking down State Street the next day, so I saved it and gave it to panhandlers on State Street. I know, yeah. Anyway, that was so fun, I started thinking about putting away money for this. Now, part of me felt angst about it because I'm told I should be donating to organizations that support the homeless instead of panhandlers. So I thought, okay, I'll do both. Then I had a brilliant idea that solves two problems at the same time. I've been wanting to curb my consumer spending for a while and have not been very successful, especially those online purchases, if you know what I mean. You just press that button, it's so easy. My brilliant idea is that for every non-living expense I spend money on, besides household and groceries, I will donate an equal amount to my homeless fund. And from this fund, I will donate to local organizations and possibly to the panhandlers themselves. And I welcome your arguments for why I shouldn't do that. I'm hoping this will cut down on my impulsive spending. It seems to be working as it does make me pause before hitting the purchase button. I've been doing this for a few weeks now and have already raised over $100. but just think how much I didn't spend. So is this increasing my happiness as Michael Norton's research would predict? I'm enjoying researching the local organizations and looking forward to donating to a different one each month. So I guess the answer is yes. Are my small acts of generosity leading to more generosity? As I'd hoped? I don't know yet, but I am more accepting that selfishness is part of my nature, including my generous acts. I'm content with this quote from the Gibran reading, which I will end with. For in truth, it is life that gives unto life, while you, who deem yourself a giver, are but a witness.
Thank you, Barb. My name is Kim. And here's my story. My coworker and I were at PDQ to get snacks for our team. We had an exceptionally hard morning and knew that we would be far better off if we had snacks that afternoon, and those snacks would stabilize our blood sugars. I'm a nurse. As I walked around looking for protein sources, I noticed three children walking up and down the aisle, picking up and putting down various bags of candy. And I began to judge this. I told myself a story about these purchases, what they meant to these kids and their health. All that sugar is bad, and kids don't exercise enough. You know, those talking points that we throw around in our society. Then I heard their conversation. The children would pick up the candy and discuss the cost versus their budget. And then they added up the various totals. They were laughing and smiling, and my heart opened to their experience. I was taken instantly back to my childhood, the pooling of our money, the walk to the candy store, the group purchase after some very serious negotiations, the joy and laughter as we felt the excitement of the victory and the anticipation of our consumption. And I observed them from a distance, but only for a few minutes. I soon found myself on the same aisle, and I wanted to be part of their joy. So I pointed out how the prices were deceiving, and I explained to them how to get the most candy for the littlest amount of money. It felt like the right thing to do. Okay. Their eyes got big, their smiles got bigger, their excitement grew as they learned this new information, and I was filled with happiness and excitement as I left them to ponder all the abundant options that were in front of them. As I stood in the line to make my purchase, I heard the two older children tell the younger child how important it was that this child got what they wanted too. The youngest one's eyes got big and their smile got bigger. The back and forth continued as they computed how to stay within their budget but include what everybody wanted. And the older two were so compassionate and loving towards this younger child. They had their hand on each other's backs and they were walking up and down the aisle. This all happened at PDQ. It was very spiritual. So my heart grew two more sizes. Feeling my money in my hand, I handed the cashier my money before he had even rung up my purchases and asked if he would give the money to the three children when they came up to make their purchase. And he looked over at the candy crew and smiled and agreed. More joy. Initially, as I walked away, I began to feel guilty. I felt like my $4 wasn't enough. Maybe I should have given more. I found myself wanting to judge the value of what I did and what the children were purchasing. Those kids didn't eat all that sugar. Who was I to intervene? Then my coworker said, "That was so awesome. That money is going to make their day." And then she retold the story to everyone at work, and she spread the joy to everyone. I love when spirit intervenes and resets our thinking. I was drawn to their joy and generosity. I was able to use my money to make other humans happy. And once I was orbiting their reality, I let go of judgment. My coworkers were riding the wave of joy and generosity too, and they continued to spread it out to others. Thankfully, my coworker even spread it back to me and got me out of my head. This idea that love calls us to give without exception is a spiritual calling. We are all inherently worthy of receiving and giving without changing one darn thing. I'm a crier, you know it. Okay. When we amplify generosity and love, we create a ripple effect that continues to spread outward without judgment, touching all who come in contact without exception. So I'm going to read that again. I can get through it. This idea that love calls us to give without exception is a spiritual calling. We are all inherently worthy of receiving and giving without changing one thing. When we amplify generosity and love, we create a ripple effect that continues to spread outward without judgment, touching all those who it comes in contact with. So now I invite you to think about ripples you've either received or created, and I hope that you'll share it with one of your neighbors. I'm going to give you about 2 minutes to share your story, and then I'm going to ding the infamous gong and bring us back so that other person can share the story. So please turn to your neighbor and begin to share. Switch. Thank you all for your generous sharing. We'll return back to the service.
As part of this congregation's mission to be of service to our community, we give half the uncommitted Sunday offerings to local organizations whose work furthers our mission. This morning,
speaking of giving, right.
This morning, our Share the Plate donations will go to Centro Hispano of Dane County, which provides various programs to families, youth, and adults in the Latino community, including legal services, youth development, health and wellness, and vocational services. There's more information about them in your order of service, I think. If not, we can find out for you. In the spirit of love and for the continuing work of this congregation, we will now take the morning offering. We are so grateful for everyone's financial contributions to this congregation. And we commit together to ensure that the funds that we gather collectively do a greater good for ourselves and our world than they could have done alone.
As part of building beloved community together, this congregation spends time every Sunday sharing from our hearts. This is the time in our service in which we invoke the love that binds us together by speaking or silently acknowledging our joys and sorrows in this space that we make sacred. It's not a time for announcements or political commentary. Rather, it's a time to share those personal experiences that break our hearts wide open. If sharing within this community would magnify your joy or bring you solace, we invite you to come forward and light a candle. Please begin by sharing your name and then briefly give voice to your joy or sorrow. You may also hold your joy or sorrow in silence or raise your hand and we will light a candle for you. Please form a line along the railing to our right and come forward one at a time. He has a joy in his heart, he let me know. Do you want to light a candle, Joseph? Or should we light a candle for you?
Hello, my name is Sean, and I'm lighting this candle in sorrow for a young woman, I'm sure you've all heard, named Ciara, who is murdered in Carson's Drive within the just very intimate view of my bedroom window and of Ann and Marge's house as well. One of our neighbors was as a nurse, and she was the first responder and found the woman deceased. And she and my wife and I and one other person from my condo group we're at the vigil at the park, Warner Park, the other day, and it was the first time I was ever at such a vigil, and it was very overwhelming, to say the least. And and pretty much predominated my thoughts the last several days. Because when I lived in Minneapolis, there was several murders, and it led to a gang task force. And then it turned out that it had nothing to do with any gangs in Minneapolis, and it just happened to be some couple of guys from Detroit that were rolling up to Minneapolis once a month and shooting people and taking their stuff. And eventually, they were caught. And so, I hope these people who've been arrested get their justice. Amen.
I'm Molly, and I'm lighting a candle of joy because my son is back. He got in this morning at 4 a.m., so he's not here right now. But I am.
But you are.
My name is Jeff, and this is a candle of largely joy with a little bit of sorrow. Just the challenges of what we call our period of vagrancy, where we've moved out of our apartment and have our stuff scattered across like 5 different places, including like we have bikes locked up out there, and there's a car jammed with stuff at my work. But mostly it's a candle of joy because we have a house that we're going to be moving into. We're really excited about it, and it's a candle of joy because there have been so many people that have helped us in this time. You know, friends coming out and helping us move on a disgustingly humid day, or Heather putting us up and putting up with us until we can move into our house. It's just been really wonderful to kind of see people come out and be a part of that and make that whole process a lot easier by being a part of it.
My name is Jean, and I'm lighting two candles today. One is for my aunt, Rita Sebastian. She passed away recently after 86 years of a lot of trials and a lot of triumphs. And the other candle is because yesterday my sister and I went kind of strolling through Wausau with my dad. Both my parents grew up in Wausau, and we went and saw their houses that they grew up in and some other things in Wausau. And it just really gave me this incredible feeling of just some kind of connectedness that was just... it was just amazing. I can't even really describe it, but it was great.
My name is Pete. This is sort of mixed. A friend of mine back in Lawrence, where I'm from, just gave birth to a healthy baby boy named Andres, and they're doing great, so that's really wonderful news. But they're also dealing with some very sad news. Her mom has been fighting against, basically fighting a deportation case after several years ago she was told to check a box indicating that she was a U.S. citizen when she went to get her driver's license, and she was accused of felony voter fraud, and after many years of fighting, she just was deported to Peru. So she's back in Lima, apparently. So the good with the bad, I guess.
Papa likes reading books.
Oh, don't forget to light your candle.
Hi, I'm Jossie, and I am lighting a candle for Chris Glad, who responded to my call for pick up any of your lost and found items in the back hallway. But she emailed me because she is claiming a lost and found item, as you can too. But also, she is currently in Fresno, California for probably a month. She's helping her mom into independent or assisted living. Her mom has experienced confusion, which is potentially due to super high anxiety. They're waiting for more lab tests, but Chris was saying that it's amazing how debilitating that anxiety can be. She has two hopes, one for peace of mind and the ability to have her mom transition without additional suffering, and two, that Chris and her brother Mark are able to walk her through this with love and care and intact mental health. So, for Chris and her family.
Thanks, Jossie. Hi, everybody. I'm Kirsten. And this is a candle of excitement, joy, but some apprehension. I was invited about a month ago by a long-term Peace Corps friend to go to Poland as a chaperone for 46 college students who are going there for a program, overseas program. So for 17 days, I will be in Poland, starting Friday. And you know, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, this should be fun and exciting, all expenses paid. But it's a little overwhelming just because of my house, and I was gonna have painting done, and the painter hasn't gotten back to me, and I don't know when that's gonna happen. So it's just, you know, I feel like a have a full plate. But thanks for your thoughts.
I just am feeling really thankful that today's offering is going to Centro Hispano. I am a nurse, as I said earlier, and I work at Access Community Health Centers, and I work as a triage nurse a little bit, but mostly what I get to do is work with new moms and babies and help them bond, and moms learn how to feed their babies, and the women and families I serve are Hispanic, and it is heartbreaking what they have to go through to get their needs met, and Centro Hispano, along with my clinic, which I'm very proud of, make their lives easier, so thank you.
I will light a final candle for all that remains unspoken, for all that is still held in the depths of our hearts. For the joys shared, we join you in celebration. For the sorrows spoken, we offer our sympathy and compassion. May the caring of this community bring you loving kindness and hope. Please join in hymn number 402, From You I Receive. You may remain seated for our song response. Heather's going to play it through once, and then we'll sing it through twice.
Extinguish our chalice to these words written by Maddie Cifontas. We extinguish this flame, but we keep its light in our hearts, with its message of love and justice, taking it outside these walls to the world that we live in, until we are together again. Please rise in body and or spirit and join us in singing our closing hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land.
Thank you.
Thank you. I invite you to join hands with people nearby. Thank you. This closing is "In the End It Won't Matter" by John C. Morgan. In the end, it won't matter how much we have, but how generously we have given. It won't matter how much we know, but rather how well we live. And it won't matter how much we believe, but how deeply we love. Go in peace, gentle people. Go in peace.